to minute 89 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob.
And I'm J-Dub.
And joining me today is J-Dub of Dubsism. Welcome back to the show, J-Dub.
Welcome back. And I don't know why I just decided to jump your line there, but, sorry.
No, that's okay. It's fun. It keeps things a little diverse, a little different. You know, people won't expect it. So, you know, as I always say, expect the unexpected. You know, as they...
Well, then that one.
Exactly. Episode 89 begins with Strachwitz finally putting the pieces of the puzzle together and goes all the way till Ives looks desperately around him. So we're back at another pivotal scene in the movie. Yesterday, at the end of the minute, we reached a point where Strachwitz was starting to figure out that something is afoul because of the way that Werner is able to pour coffee into the ground and somehow disappears. So he quickly jumps up and realizes that there's something very suspicious here. And he looks up, and I like the way that you see him just for a fraction of a second looking at the edges of the stove. And then you see on his face that everything just is coming together. And then he realizes that, wait a second, it's the exact same size as those planks that were underneath the mattress. So, I mean, and it happens so quickly. I mean, we're talking within seconds. I think they might have had the character do this a little bit too fast. But regardless, it still works. It still comes across in a great way that you see how his head basically explodes from the notion that he just figured it out. And so he jumps up, takes out the two planks, and then he takes the planks and hits the chimney of the stove, which you'd wonder why he's doing that. You know, how does he know that that's something that will easily come apart? Do you have any thoughts on that one?
Well, because if you were not moving the thing regularly, you would have the chimney pretty securely tightened. Otherwise, you're going to fill up your living space with carbon monoxide.
Correct. But how does he know that he can so easily displace, you know, that chimney?
Because I think he suspects that the tunnel is underneath it, and that's why the coffee's draining through the floor.
Okay. All right, that is a fair assumption. I just looked at it and I said to myself, okay, even if I suspected something was underneath, my first thought is not going to be to break the chimney, you know, to bust it open.
Well, breaking the chimney confirms my suspicion. If I hit the chimney and it's firmly bolted in place and all I do is dent the pipe, then there might not be anything underneath it.
Right.
But if the chimney's easily removed, because you have to understand, I mean, if you're going to dig a tunnel under a stove in a POW barracks, you have to be able to move everything quickly.
Yes. And obviously, it's also scorching hot. He knows that, I mean, you see how much vapor comes out when he knocks that chimney, you know, when he opens that area on the chimney.
True. Either that or he's just a destructive kind of guy.
Yeah. Because the question is, you know, he's going to have to explain himself if he's wrong.
Right.
Why did you break it? Well, I suspected that they were doing something wrong there. Apparently, he was right in this particular case. Now, I love the fact that now we get to see the prisoners once again outside. You know, they heard the screaming beforehand, but they're all now looking at the barracks. But how do they really know what's going on in the barracks? Because did they hear him, you know, bang against the chimney there?
Well, what else?
Or whatever it is, because Danny is so shocked that he even drops his cup of, you know, his cup of booze.
Well, what else is there for him to find? I mean, you would think, I mean, the effort to make a tunnel and to conceal it, what else could they possibly have? So when they start hearing the stove getting moved, they kind of got to know the jig is up at that point, don't you think?
Yeah, but can my question is, can they hear them moving the stove? Because again, the prisoners are moving the stove very easily, you know, and as stealthily and as silently as possible.
But when the guards are moving it, they obviously don't care about being stealthy.
Well, they haven't started moving it yet. What they've done is just you know, hit the stove, the stovetop, the pipe or whatever, stovepipe. This was called the stovepipe. I keep calling it
chimney, stovepipe. Yeah,
right.
Well, exactly. They're obviously going to hear that, but I think we are. I'm a couple of seconds ahead of you from where you're at, so I'll just let you keep going.
Right. No, it just it to me it's a little strange that they can hear that. They heard Werner screaming, but did you know, is it that loud? You know, when he bangs against the chimney. That's the question. Again, it's effective. That's the point here. You know, they have a whole bunch of the POWs standing up and looking at the barracks to try and figure out what's going on. Again, this goes back to what we were discussing earlier this week about the great editing that they do here. You know, how they're jump back and forth.
Try it this way. If, you know, how much do they actually have to hear to figure out that something is being discovered, because the tunnel is probably the only thing in there to be discovered?
True, but again, Danny drops his cup, so he hears or sees something, and before he drops that cup, you know.
Or are we back to
dropping in on the suspicion that maybe they found it? They know that it's something that it was found.
Or are we back to a discussion of a couple of days ago, like how much were they actually drinking? How strong is the moonshine? You know.
That's okay. That is a very good point. So at this point, the guards, both Strachowicz and the third guard, which I can't remember his name, it's not Frick, they're able to place the blocks of wood on the right spots on the stove, and they pick up the stove and in a very strange way pick it up and move it. You know, obviously they're not as they haven't mastered yet how to move a stove, how to move a boiling hot stove off of a tunnel trap.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but they do it.
Yes, they do it very effectively with the way that they do it. At this point, they start speaking in German. You know, we have Schachter say, "Das ist es also." The response to that is, again, the prisoners can somehow hear it. We see him. He realizes that there is something going on here. And it's interesting that he's able to find which tile to pull up quite quickly. You know, we had the discussion a few weeks ago when they actually put this in that, you know, Henley said that he knows he's got tiles that'll fit in perfectly there, meaning that they'll have tiles that it won't look as if something is going on there. Apparently, Strachowicz is a lot smarter than we thought, because he's able to figure it out. You know, he quickly, within literally 10 seconds, is able to find out how to pull up the block of tile and lift it up and discover underneath Tom.
Well, now, how long do you think that guard's been inspecting barracks? I mean, you would think after a while he's going to know what he's looking for.
Yeah, but I'm assuming that what he found now is definitely not something that he's found before. You know,
well, right, but that is, I mean, it's, you know, something's not right, something's going to stand out. So that's why he went right to it.
Uh-huh. Okay, all right, that is fair. Again, we had this discussion weeks ago. You know, this is supposed to be a brand new camp. So, you know, the tiles are all should look, you know, spick and span, completely new. You know, they've been there just a few months already at this point. You know, everything's brand new. This wasn't a camp that was used beforehand. Basically, once he picks up the tiles on top of the tunnel, the jig is up. You know, they know that he's actually found the tunnel. And he starts blowing on his whistle. Alarm in the camp. Foul.
Well,
sports analogies.
This is the moment where when the whistle is blowing, the prisoners across the board know that the jig is up. And if they were all in a cartoon, thought bubble would pop up over their head that says crap. Although my notes have another word that's not so family friendly, so I'm sticking with crap.
You can say whatever you want. It'll just be viewed out.
I don't want to make the editing harder than it has to be. So the word is crap, and they know the jig is up. The tunnel's been found. Like we led up to at the end of yesterday's podcast, the heavy weather's coming now. Now it's just how much rain's going to fall.
Exactly. There's no question about that. And yeah, so we get to see reactions of a lot of the characters to everything that's going on. You have, you know, Mac and Ives, who were just quite jolly and drunk yesterday. realizing that things are not as hunky-dory as they both made it out to be yesterday.
Right.
You know, basically, Max screams out, "Oh, my God, they found Tom." I love that he does it so dramatically. It's great. And, you know, then you have Henley. At this point, you have all these prisoners, you know, turn around, and a lot of them run towards the different barracks. And you see Henley, you know, getting drunk with Blythe, you know, and he's pointing to his canteen. And at this point also, you know, he realizes it. It's just great the way that they do this. And then you get to see Ives, who just stays back. And once again, we get to see how broken a character he is. Now Angus Lennie does such a great job with this character, because of the fact that, you know, we get to see him go from extreme to extreme throughout the entire movie. You know, his emotions are just perfectly done, because on the one hand you have him, you know, jolly and happy when he's getting ready to try and escape, and then each time, you know, he gets sadder and sadder as he thinks that everything is doomed. And then yesterday we discussed the fact that he's starting to get hope, and he's dancing a familiar Scottish jig. And then he's back to being completely without any direction. You know, he's just it. That's it.
Oh, you just said the magic word that I was going for here. Do you remember a couple of days back when we were on this topic, and we went through the baseball lineup of, like, who's the leadoff hitter? Who's the cleanup hitter? Who's this guy? Who's that guy? And as I'm watching this minute, I thought, oh, we missed something in that batting order. And somewhere between 4, 5, and 6, we've got to get the director in here, because the way all these shots are framed allow for so much of that acting that you're talking about. The, you know, the facial expressions, the communication without speaking, the nonverbal stuff. And then, you know, like when we talked about, you know, the shots from inside the barracks to the prisoners in the yard and all of those things, whether it's the direction or the editing, that's a huge part of this movie that I think we missed in that. And when you said direction, it clicked in my head.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question. John Sturges does an amazing job directing this movie. We've discussed this before, but Daniel Pfaff is great as a cinematographer. And this was edited by Ferris Webster, that was the only Oscar nomination for this entire movie, was its editing, which is superb. There's no question about the way that they've done this. Because as you pointed out, they're able to say so much with pictures and without words. And they just do it so well.
Well, like I said, in the 5 minutes that we're talking about, there's less than 100 words of dialogue.
Yes, that's correct. And it's not needed in some of these instances. I mean, in this one, just showing Angus Lennie, Ives standing there completely broken, says so much about it, especially for those of us who know what's going to happen tomorrow, because that also adds a lot to what we see in this minute.
Yep.
But I love the way how they completely, you know, we have a scene here with hundreds and hundreds of extras, and they're able to clear them out within seconds, so that you just have a shot of Ives standing there all alone. You see the garbage pails in the back. You see what if you pay attention, you can see the garbage pail that Tilts used last week to set off the firecracker or whatever it was. I mean, I think we established that he poured booze inside the garbage can and threw a match in there.
Yes.
But the lid flew off, and you still see the lid standing, you know, the lid's in the same spot on the ground right behind him. They just cleared out all the extras, and they do that so well. And then they have him, you know, he walks towards the camera, and then the camera moves in at the same time, you know, to give us a better frame shot of who Ives is and you know, how much this part of the scene is affecting this character, so much more so than anything else that we've seen up until now in this movie, or perhaps even after this scene, from what we will see later.
And then for another callback here real quick, when we were talking about the moonshine and how potent it was, well, that's what he just blew the lid off a trash can with. And this is the stuff these guys are drinking. So,
well, he did tell them not to smoke.
Well, yeah, that's fair. And I mean, I'm trying to inject a little levity here, because the tone here is getting darker and darker. And you know, it's not going to get any better as we get towards the end of this scene.
At this point, the guards open up the gates and they bring in a whole bunch of other guards to try and check what's going on. We get a quick shot of Henley and Blythe once again as the guards are still running by. And then we get Ashley Pitt. We get another shot of a whole bunch of the prisoners standing there watching what's going on. You see Hiltz, Ashley Pitt's next to him, and Ashley Pitt says out loud, "It's the tunnel." Then the guards all run around and form around 105. Now, how do they all know where they're supposed to be running to? I mean, we don't see Strachlitz outside. You know, he blew a whistle. Do you think that the whistle was signaling, you know, come to 105?
Well, I mean, Captain Von Trapp orders his kids around pretty well with a whistle and the sound of music. So, you know, maybe it's a German Austrian thing. I don't know.
Maybe that's a good point. maybe they recaptured him and, you know, he's the one who's actually blowing the whistle. He's Strachwitz. Von Trapp is Strachwitz.
I will never look at Christopher Plummer the same way again.
Exactly. And then the end of this minute gives us another great shot of Ives, where you just see him looking around, completely lost. You know, he looks back and forth to the. He looks to the left. He looks to the right, and you know that something big is going to happen.
Yeah, and this is what I was alluding to earlier, and this is why, like I said earlier, I tried to do the Horace Blinder thing where I'm only watching these scenes minute by minute, but this was the part I couldn't do it because A, it's so obvious, like you said, that something bad is coming, and B, I've seen this movie, I know what's coming, and you know, that's why, you know, when we talked about the spitball, and I brought up a Gaylord Perry reference, and I said, you know, there's going to be a hidden sports analogy coming that's about doctoring baseballs. And so I went to one that's on that topic, and it focuses more on the bumbling of the German guards finding the stove than what's about to happen at the end of this minute, which I will let you wrap us up before I get to that.
Right. As we said, I mean, you see that the music here is also gives us an indication that something is about to happen. And Elmer Bernstein, as I've mentioned so many times, does such an amazing job with the music in this movie because he gets the tones just right. And here, you know that something's happened. You have nothing else to discuss about this minute? Why don't you give us your hidden sports analogy?
Well, and like I said, I wanted to stick to a little bit of levity with this because in tomorrow's minute, we're going to not be able to avoid what happens. So when we brought up the doctored baseballs and the stumbling of the German guards, I went back to a moment from 1987 with the Minnesota Twins, and maybe you remember this.
Kirby Puckett.
Kirby Puckett, yeah. If you're being asked about the Minnesota Twins and you don't know the answer,
especially 1987.
Kirby Puckett, you're probably right.
Like, sorry. That's...
Yes. Yeah, well, no, you're right. But yeah, this is about a pitcher, okay. Joe Niekro, who in the middle of a game against the Angels got caught scuffing baseballs with an Emery board. And I can't do the video justice, but do yourself a favor, and anybody that's listening, just go YouTube, Joe Niekro Emery board. And the video it's part Naked Gun, it's part Inspector Clouseau. It's hilarious because as they're literally searching Niekro for the Emery board, he flips it out of his back pocket, and first baseman Kent Herbeck tries to stand on it, but one of the umpires watches it flip right out of his pocket, right onto the ground. You have to see it, but the way it unfolded comically, it went back to your point about how the Germans were finding the stove, and you know, why was he crouching down? What was how did he know what they were looking for? And when you watch that video, there's a video right next to it that is Joe Niekro going on the David Letterman show in the aftermath of this incident. And he shows up on stage wearing a carpenter's tool belt. And he's got like a belt sander and an Emery board and a nail gun. He's having fun with it. And that's why I said, okay, I'm going light here with this because the end of this minute is not light. The next minute is definitely not light. So let's have a little fun.
All right, great. So why don't you once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Dubsism, D-U-B-S-I-S-M. It's a first page search result on Google. Email dubsism@yahoo.com, dubsism.com for the blog, Instagram, Facebook, any other social media platform you might care to choose. Carrier Pigeon, Smoke Signal, everything, we're out there. Dubsism, D-U-B-S-I-S-M.
All right, and you can get in touch with us by sending us an email, thegreatminute@gmail.com. Our Facebook group is The Cooler. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. And our Twitter account is greatescapemxm. So, JW, you want to come back, finish up the week with us tomorrow?
If you'll keep having me, I'll keep coming.
All right, I'll let you. Why not? Why not? So until tomorrow, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.